Good morning. How is everybody doing? Good? Can everybody hear me okay? Okay, thank you. The weather is nice out there. And I have been told the stock market will go up as well. So thank you. Despite all those nice things happening outside, you are spending time with us here. And very much appreciate that. Is it time to start? Yeah, looks like, yeah, okay. Again, thanks for coming in. How many of you here are native English speaking, whose first language is English? Okay, so like me, not many are. And I have no idea why a natively non-English speaking person speaking to a largely non-English speaking audience in English. So that's how the technology is. So please bear with me if you cannot understand my accent or my pronunciation. And see, the audio has started playing it already. Is it better now? Down? Down? Okay. Is it better now? Okay. Thank you. And so please bear with me. And I promise if you don't understand anything, please raise your hands. Please ask questions. I want this presentation to be as interactive as possible. And hopefully by the end of it, you would walk out with some good understanding, some good good experience to share. We're going to talk today about what are the HA plus DR. What do I mean by HA is a high availability, which is usually referred to availability within a data center. If something fails within a data center, how quickly, how soon you can get something up and running on another server, and be SQL service available as quickly as possible. DR usually referred to you having a separate copy of all your data in another data center by whatever means. And then how quickly that data center be able to up and running and provide service if your primary data center goes down. Is that the usual notion of HA and DR in the audience? Okay. And we will talk about not just HA, not just DR, but how to deploy HA plus DR combined design, combined solution. How many of you already have some kind of HA and DR and or DR? Wonderful. How many of you are familiar with what is always on? A large audience. How many are familiar with availability groups? Okay, wonderful. How many of you think availability groups and always on are one and the same? Okay, so I hope I'll clarify that. Okay, they're not the same. Okay, so we'll clarify that. Okay, so my name is Sanjay Mishra, and I have my colleague Mikhil with me. And he's a local, so I tried to be smart and got a local.
I used to be a local.
He used to be local, okay, not anymore.
Yes, okay. So my role here is I will be demoing bits of Always On. I was actually the lead developer on this stuff, and actually one of my reasons that I'm here is to talk to you guys to get feedback on the feature. This is a very valuable experience to me as a developer to be here. So that's what I'm doing here right now.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Mikhil. And I'm briefly assuming here that audience mostly knows about what are always on components, failover cluster instances, and availability groups. We would not have much time to go into basics and fundamentals of how each of these technologies work, but if you have questions, please feel free to raise hands. I will try to clarify as much as possible as we go, keeping in mind the pace of the session. And if not, if there are fundamental questions remain, I'll definitely take questions at the end or at the booth, and I'll definitely help you clarify. What this session is all about is you have individual technologies. How do you build an end-to-end HA and DR solution, keeping your RPO, RTO in mind? Okay, everybody understand what is RPO? RPO is recovery point objective. That means if your primary SQL server fails and you bring up another SQL server to service, did you lose any data? Is there a potential for data loss? And RTO means recovery time objective. That means when the failure happens, how soon, how quickly are you able to bring up SQL Server and start giving service? So those are the two components that every HA and DR designer will keep there on in front of them, and they will have a goal of these two for local HA. They will have goal for these two for DR. If you are designing something without having these goals, you may be successful, but you may not be also, because you do not know what goals are you trying to meet by your design. Okay. And here it is. Always on is not equal to availability groups. So what is always on? Always on is a superset of availability groups and failover cluster instance. To think it in terms of a broader way, how it is that always on is a brand name used for all HADR technologies in SQL Server 2012 that were either newly introduced, like availability groups, or significantly enhanced, like failover cluster instances. And using these two technologies, we'll be building various HA and DR solutions today. And availability groups is not equal to database mirroring. Database mirroring has been there for a couple of releases in SQL Server. How many of you use database mirroring? Quite a lot. Availability groups is similar in concept, but not exactly the same. Database mirroring, you know, that can have only one secondary. It is one database at a time. The secondary is not readable. Availability groups resolves all those issues. And database mirroring is on deprecation path. We have announced in SQL Server 2012 that database mirroring will be deprecated, which means is that it will be still be available for two more releases. And so if you are there, you keep using, and we hope by that time you would have found enough motivation to upgrade to availability groups, which is the replacement for database mirroring. Make sense? Any questions? Yes, sir. Correct. All the always-on technology that you see, availability group included, is an enterprise edition. Yes. Okay. Yes, sir. So the question is, availability groups does uses SQL failover clustering or Windows failover clustering? So both these technologies use Windows Server failover clustering. Failover cluster, SQL Server failover cluster instances uses a shared storage model of Windows clustering, where multiple nodes share one storage, whereas availability groups uses Windows clustering in a non-shared storage way. Each node, all the nodes do not share the data. Every node has their own copy of the data, and that's how it is. But in the behind, in the background, it does use Windows Server clustering. Okay. Yes, sir. So are you talking about the hands-on LAM?
Yeah, we just give it a try and just delete an availability group.
Okay. Okay, so the question in the hands-on, by the way, for you to try out this thing, new technology, we have the hands-on lab, so I would encourage everybody to go try hands-on lab, we do failover, create availability groups, see how they're working. The questions in the audience is, in the test, availability group was deleted and then everything stopped working. So you need to go through some kind of troubleshooting there. If you deleted availability group, how you deleted it? Did you delete the availability group or did you delete the databases behind it? But if you deleted only the availability group, the databases should all be there. They will be in the restoring state, and you need to go and recover those databases and build a new availability group. Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll quickly move on. So we will talk about three HA plus DR design patterns. And number one, we'll talk about a shared storage solutions. I find this a lot used in Europe, especially. This is based on storage-based replication. How many of you here use storage-based replication? A lot. I do see that a lot being used in Europe. And this solution is a multi-site failover cluster instance. One failover cluster instance spanning across multiple sites, or at least two sites, and you have storage replication taking care of moving the data. To the Windows and to the SQL Server, it is a shared storage solution because it is being masked behind the scene for you. The second solution is the purely availability groups based solution. What it does is every node has their own copy. There is no shared storage involved. And you can have some copies in local for local HA, some copies in remote for your DR. And that's how you build HA and DR solution. And the third design pattern is a combination of shared storage plus non-shared storage. You can use failover cluster instance local in your data center and then use availability groups across data centers for your DR. How many of you use failover cluster instances plus database mirroring today? So this is an equivalent of that when you replace database mirroring with availability groups. And how many of you use database mirroring for HA and log shipping for DR? And you know that there are multiple technologies you're using for HA and DR, and availability group is one unified solution to replace that. And these are the basic design patterns, and we have seen there are some slight variations some companies, some customers deploy, and we can talk about that as well. Okay. Tomorrow I'll be talking about specific customer examples deploying these design patterns. So if you're here, please do come and attend this session. You'll see how real-life examples in production customers are using one or more of these design patterns. Okay, let's move on quickly to the first of these three design patterns, which is using multi-site failover cluster instances for local HA as well as for DR. And you know what it is? This looks like this. You have, in this example, there are two sites, and one Windows cluster is spanning these two sites. Within that Windows cluster, you have one failover cluster instance and multiple nodes. Some nodes are local, some nodes are remote. And there is shared storage at each site. But behind the scene, storage-based replication is taking care of copying the data. So to SQL and to Windows, it is a shared storage solution. If you used, this solution existed before as well. In earlier release of SQL Server, this existed. Except that what was needed is a stretch VLAN across the two sites, stretch virtual LAN, so that you could have one common IP address for your SQL Server cluster. That limitation has been removed, and now you can use IP addresses from different subnets, and SQL Server failover cluster will use those IP addresses in an OR configuration. What does it mean that? Either of those two IP addresses will be available and your cluster is available and your resource is available. Okay, look, some of the quick things to note here is, as I mentioned, this is one single failover cluster instance. Because this uses storage-based replication, you need to work with your storage vendor. Whoever is providing your shared storage SAN solution, they will provide the storage replication software. What they will also provide is a software that is called Cluster Enabler, which allows you to fail over from one site to another site. And that Cluster Enabler software will take the disks offline on one site, bring it online on another site, and enable the SQL Server resource to fail over and come online. And these two components you need these two non-Microsoft components you would need. Other consideration is the networking. As I just mentioned, what we improved in SQL Server 2012 is an OR dependency between IP addresses from the two sites. So one SQL Server failover cluster instance can have multiple IP addresses from different subnets grouped together by OR. Okay. One interesting thing to note here is that if you are using SQL Windows Server 2008 or later, before you can create a Windows cluster, you need to run validation. And when you run validation on such a configuration, your storage validation will fail, because it will say that some storage is not available on one side, some storage is not available on another side, and it's okay. And it's okay to fail storage validation. It is okay to click on this radio button, this box that will appear to you. There are two things that appear. They say, yes, I want Microsoft support, and hence all storage must pass, all validation must pass. Other option is, no, I don't want Microsoft support, and then you got to click this one. If you click the yes option, then it will go to validation again, and it will fail again. You come back to the same screen. You got to click no. Even if it say no, I do not need Microsoft support, you are still supported, because Microsoft has gone ahead and published a KV article which says that multi-site clustering, which uses storage-based technologies for copying data from one site to another site, do not need to pass storage validation. All other validation must pass, though. You cannot skip the other validation, but storage validation can be skipped or can be ignored. Okay, and also, when you are building the Windows cluster for this kind of configuration, you may see a recommended quorum pattern come up, which says, use node and disk majority. You can ignore that recommendation. For a multi-site failover cluster instance, the recommended quorum models are either node majority or node plus file share majority. So the default recommendation, if it pops up node and disk majority, you can ignore that. One more interesting improvement that we did in SQL Server 2012 is we allowed you to have tempdb on a local storage. As you know, all your SQL Server's data and log must be on a shared storage because it's a failover cluster instance. But tempdb is not much use being on a shared storage, because every time there is a failover, SQL Server restarts and all tempdb is wiped off. And so there was no value in having tempdb on a shared storage from a customer point of view. There was no value, especially for copying it over from one site to another site, because it is again restarted and wiped off. So this allows you to have tempdb on a local disk on each node, thereby enables you to use a different kind of hardware or device or solid-state disk or anything to improve tempdb performance if you like. It also allows you to save on bandwidth, because now you don't need to copy all those tempdb files across the sites for the multi-site failover cluster. And also, if you are licensed based on the megabytes or gigabytes that you copy by your storage vendor, you save money on licensing as well. Okay, any questions on the first design pattern that we talked about? Okay, we move on to the next one, which is the hot new cake, which is the new thing that we did in SQL Server 2012 called availability groups. Hopefully it is not your database failed and you're being paged. Okay. This is what happens. So if you have designed your HA and DR perfectly, you will not be paged, because the failover will be all automatic and taken care for you. Just joking. Okay, this is how it works. You can have multiple replicas of the same set of databases. As you can see, we have two sites, primary data center and a DR data center. And in this topology example, we have two copies in the primary data center, on each server. And we are using synchronous mechanism here, because you can have synchronous secondary or asynchronous secondary. How many secondaries can an availability group have? Four. Of which two can be synchronous. Of the two synchronous, one can be your automatic failover pair. So in this topology, we have server 1 and server 2 in the primary data center participating in a automatic failover pair. And then we have another asynchronous copy across data centers for DR. All of these are part of same Windows cluster. And you can see Windows cluster is being used here in a non-shared storage manner. So this is a non-shared storage solution. Okay. One thing to note here, especially compared to the previous design pattern, is that the failover, the unit of failover, is a group of databases. It is not the whole instance. It's a group of databases for your local HA, and the same unit of failover for your DR, which is the same group of databases. So if you have objects outside your user databases, and everybody has those objects, logins, jobs, linked servers, etc., you will need to think of ways how they can be copied over to your secondaries. If you are aware of, say, a new feature called contained databases, have you heard of that feature? If you heard of contained databases, and contained databases, if you define a database to be contained database, then it contains the logins, and logins will fail over along with the databases. In future, it is our goal to enhance the contained database capabilities to include more and more of these objects that today reside outside the user database. So when you fail over FLOD group, you get everything that your application needs. Today, if you have jobs, link server, etc., you have to do some kind of customization, write some scripts to be able to copy them over to your secondary servers. Okay. Any questions on this? Yes, sir.
The current recommendation of Microsoft is not having more than 100 databases in one availability group.
And where did you find the recommendation, sir?
It was a presentation from Microsoft.
Okay. We can talk about that. So there is no hard limit.
Okay.
No hard limit on how many databases can be part of a availability group. It's a function of your workload and your resource usage. And we have seen that if you put in too many databases in an availability group without proper tuning, without proper sizing of your servers, you may run into overloaded system, you may run into loss of performance, you may run into lack of worker threads. So all those, but there is no hard limit. You can, as long as your workload and your configuration, architecture, or hardware supports it, you can have them. So what we recommend is that you test and figure out if it will work for you. Some workloads, it will work. Some workloads, obviously, it will not work.
Okay. Can I ask one?
Yes, absolutely. So just to say why I asked back is that because there is no recommended or there is no hard limit. It's a function of workload plus your hardware.
Okay. And as far as I know, the system databases are currently not supported?
Correct. That's the question is, system databases are not part of the availability groups. That's correct. And that's exactly what I was mentioning about, is that the unit of failover is your user databases, the group of user databases that you have put together in the availability groups. So you have logins, you have jobs, link server that remain outside the user databases. You got to have some kind of custom mechanism for failing them over. Logins can be handled by contained database. So if you have defined your user databases to be contained database, then login can fail over along with the database availability group failover. There was a question on this side. Yes.
Can we read data from secondary side?
Correct. The question is, can we read data from the secondary? Yes, all secondaries are readable. So at the time of availability group creation or afterwards, you can say, make my secondary readable, and then you can read from those secondaries. Also, you can take backup from the secondaries. Okay. The number one prerequisite for availability groups is that you need a Windows Server failover cluster. All the servers should be part of the same domain so that you can build a Windows cluster. And that's the number one prerequisite. There are other prerequisites, and I'm providing you a link there on Books Online. Please go and take a look and ensure that you meet those prerequisites. We talked about units of failover. Interesting thing to note here is that I saw some hands raised that you use log shipping for your DR. And if you replace log shipping and now use availability group for your DR, that means you took away log shipping. Along with the taking away log shipping, you took away your regular scheduled backup jobs. You need those regular scheduled log backup jobs. So you must find another way to perform regular log backups. Make sense? And if you used delayed applied on the secondary for the log shipping, do people use that here? Okay. Some people use delayed apply to be able to recover from a user error in case you delete a table or something. Log shipping provides a way to apply to be delayed so that it gives you a time frame when you can go and take those, read the data out as it existed before the delete or something. The FLOD group secondaries do not provide that functionality. So if you need that functionality, you may continue to use log shipping. You can add log shipping on top of availability groups. So that's an option you have. And you can use you can ship logs from your secondary. Because you can take log backups on the secondary, you can ship logs from the secondary. Okay. How many of you have three data centers? Some of you have, yes. And if you want from an automatic failover from your primary data center to the secondary data center, some people want that, some people do that. I know some customers who are deployed in production like that. And they use the third data center to be an arbitrator, and they put a file share witness and do a three-way quorum and make sure that if one of the data center is down or the primary is down, there is an automatic failover to the secondary data center. So in this case, you need to use synchronous between the two sites. And if your network between the two data centers is good enough to support synchronous, then this is a very useful solution to have. Any questions? Everybody knows how FLOD group works. The continuous, the logs are taken from the primary. You keep doing your transactions on the primary, read-write on the primary, and the logs are taken from the primary, sent it to the secondary, and the log is hardened on the secondary log, and then the logs are applied on the secondary. This happens continuously for all the secondaries. If it is synchronous secondary, the transaction will wait till that log is written to the log file of the secondary and acknowledgement come back. If you have multiple synchronous secondary, you can have two synchronous secondary. Two of those synchronous secondaries, the transaction will wait for the acknowledgement to come back from both of them, and only then the transaction will be committed. If it is asynchronous secondary, transaction does not wait. Okay, we'll talk about the third design pattern, which is using a combined solution. Failover cluster instances for local HA and FLOD groups for DR. When I asked about database mirroring and failover clustering, a lot of people raised hands using failover clustering in the local data center and then using database mirroring for your DR. You can replace the database mirroring for your DR, that component, and use FLOD groups. To gain the benefits of availability groups like readable secondary. Okay. This is how it looks like. Two data centers, you can have more if you like, and a Windows cluster spanning across the two data centers. You have a set of nodes in the primary data center with a shared disk, because that's a failover cluster instance. And you may have another failover cluster instance on your DR site, again with a set of shared storage. The storage from one site is not visible to the nodes on the other site, and vice versa. Make sense? From two data center point of view, it's a non-shared storage. Within a data center, it's a shared storage. Making sense? Anytime there is a node failure on the primary data center, it's an automatic failure within the failover cluster instance within the data center. If all the nodes fail in the primary data center or all entire primary data center is down, you can have manual failover to the DR. One thing to note is if you're using the previous architecture, which is purely non-shared storage availability group solution, then availability groups provide you automatic failover. You can have one secondary designated as an automatic failover secondary. If you combine failover cluster instances and availability groups, like in this solution, the automatic failover is only within the failover cluster instance. The availability group failover in this solution is always manual. Making sense? Because if we enable that to be automatic failover, when a node fails, which failover happens? Does the availability group failover happen, or the failover cluster instance failover happen? And that, to avoid that confusion, we have ensured that only the local failover cluster instance is the one which is automatic. The availability group, whether you have an availability group copy locally, you could have another copy of your replica in local for readable purpose or whatever, or remote, irrespective, the availability group is manual when combined with failover cluster instances. One more thing to note here is that unit of failover for your local failures is an instance. The unit of failover for DR is a group of databases. So, note that different. Yes, sir.
Can one have several instances due to collision?
The question is, can one have several instances? Yes, you can have several instances. Several instances on the nodes, and each instance is providing a local set of databases for its availability. Okay. Absolutely.
In 2008 R2, we could create one cluster on one side and another cluster on the other side.
Yeah.
And create a mirroring for disaster recovery purposes.
Yes.
But here, all of the nodes must be in the same Windows failover cluster.
Correct.
If I have a problem in the Windows failover cluster, then isn't it a kind of single point of failure in the failover cluster software, I mean?
Okay. Good question. The question is, earlier I could have two independent Windows clusters at two sites and database mirroring between them, and now when I'm using availability groups, it is one Windows cluster solution across the two sites, and so Windows cluster will be a single point of failure. Windows cluster is designed in a way so that it's not a single point of failure. It is working at a set of machines, and it's working on the quorum of your set of nodes. So we'll talk about the quorum configurations in a little bit. What does that mean is that as long as you have quorum of the Windows cluster, which means is that depending on the quorum model you are using, more than half of the votes are available. I'll talk about what is a vote. And then Windows cluster is up and running, and so you have Windows cluster available. Windows cluster is distributed across multiple nodes, so any node going down or any file share going down does not bring out down the whole Windows cluster as long as you have quorum. There are situations when you may lose quorum because more than half of the nodes or votes are down, and that means it needs manual intervention. It could happen in case of a disaster, and those are the situations when you need a manual intervention, and we'll talk about that as well. Thank you.
2012 failover cluster, what you are talking about, or 2008 R2 Windows cluster?
Very good question. Am I talking about 2008 R2 Windows cluster or 2012 Windows cluster? All these things that I'm talking about are Windows cluster which is released. That means Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2008 R2. You can use the same thing in Windows Server 2012. Windows Server 2012 enhances some of these things. It produces some more functionalities, but we can talk those offline because that product is not released yet. Today, you can take this and deploy SQL Server 2012 on Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2008 R2 and get all these benefits. Make sense? Is there another question? Yes, sir.
Work with the availability group that they don't fail over to the other side.
Okay. Are you talking about this particular? Okay. So the question is that if I have a failover, then failover cluster instances will bring up my instance. What it does in the availability group? Availability groups, you always have a instance, secondary instance running. Availability group instance is running. The SQL Server is online. The files are all available. It is continuously restoring. So in case of a failover cluster instance failover, the disks are offline from the node that was owning it. They fail over to another node, disk becomes online, SQL Server instance started, and then you have the instance available. For an availability group failover, that is not the case because it's a separate set of disks, it's a separate SQL Server instance, and it is always running, the database is always in a restoring state. When an availability group failover happens, the status change happens for the availability group, and you now, the secondary becomes the primary. Does that answer your question? In this particular solution, there is no automatic failover for availability groups. The automatic failover is only within the failover cluster instance because that is within a data center. Availability group replica is residing across a data center, and now I can understand your concerns about latencies there because they could be far apart. And in this particular configuration, the availability group failover is manual. In the previous configuration that I showed, it was all availability groups across. The local secondary was the automatic failover pair, and your remote secondary will be a manual failover only when your complete data center is down. Does that answer your question? Okay, thank you. Okay, bless you. Okay. So, what do you need for this failover cluster instance and availability group together working for you? The key thing to note here is asymmetric storage. If we go back to this picture, you'll see that there is a shared storage at each site, but it is shared only within the local nodes. Correct? So not all nodes see all the storage. Previously, in a Windows cluster world, before the hotfix for asymmetric storage was released, this will not work. Because a shared storage, if at all it is shared, must be visible to all the nodes. Asymmetric disk, the concept of asymmetric storage changes that. Now you can have some storage shared or visible to only a subset of the nodes, and some storage visible to other set of nodes, and which is the one what you need for a HA plus DR solution. And then there's some other hotfixes available to make the solution work. The definition of people familiar with traditional Windows clustering know shared storage to be a symmetric shared storage. All nodes see all the disk. That's the standard. That's the default. That's the people use it. Asymmetric storage changes that, and that enables you to have FCIs at each site and database mirroring. Availability groups between them. Even though all the nodes are part of the same Windows cluster. One more thing to note, especially, sir, for your question, you can get all the slides are available to you, so no need to take pictures. For your solution, when you have two failover cluster instances and database mirroring between them, the instance name of the two failover cluster instances could be same because they were part of the different Windows clusters. Now not anymore because these are two independent failover cluster instances within the same Windows cluster. So the instance names cannot be the same. That's something changes. So if you're upgrading from the old pattern to the new design, you got to think of that. Same thing, if you use the instance name in your file paths, because if you use the default installer, the instance name is picked in your file path. We recommend that you go and change that. Because now the instance name will be part of your file path. So if you create a database file in the primary, that same file path will not be mapping to the correct file path on the secondary. So we recommend that you use identical drive letters on both sides. You use identical file paths on both sides So whenever you create or manipulate any files on the primary, it's automatically handled for you. Okay, now coming to your favorite topic about quorums. But any questions before I go to quorum? Okay, everybody fairly comfortable with the three design patterns? We talked one based on storage replication, which is shared storage. We talked one completely non-shared storage, and we talked about one which combines both. Because all these solutions use Windows cluster behind the scene, the Windows cluster needs to be up and running for your service to be available. And how does Windows cluster keep running? On a quorum. If the Windows cluster has a quorum, Windows cluster is up, and all your services, either availability group or failover cluster instances, would be running. Now, let's think about what does quorum do. In your entire topology, irrespective of how many nodes you have, how many replicas you have, how many availability groups you have, how many SQL Server instances you have, it is the entire Windows cluster where the quorum is decided. So if you have multiple availability groups within one Windows cluster, and Windows cluster is down, all your availability groups are down. So that's something to think about. But how does Windows cluster go down? Only when it loses quorum. And you have multiple quorum models. How many quorum models does Windows cluster provide? Anybody? Right, four. Node majority, which is usually the popular choice if you have odd number of nodes. Node plus file share majority. If you have even number of nodes, you can add a file share, and then you can have a odd. Or you can have node plus disk majority, especially if you used failover cluster instances with two node failover cluster instances. Almost invariably, people used node plus disk majority. And another quorum model exists called disk only, no majority. Their disk could be a single point of failure, so it is a supported but a not recommended quorum model, but I know a lot of people use it because they have protected their quorum disk adequately. So those are four quorum models you can available. Not all quorum models are available to all these architectures. For example, if you use purely non-shared storage availability group solution, there is no shared disk there, so disk cannot be part of the quorum model. One more thing to note is node votes. By default, every node in a Windows cluster has a vote. And for Windows cluster quorum to be up and available, you must have more than half vote. More than half, not half. More than half votes up. And by default, everybody has a vote. Now imagine you have one Windows Server failover cluster spanning across two sites. What if you lose connectivity between the sites? People who have two or more sites, do you lose connection between the sites? Sometimes? And then connection comes back? To prevent those situations that Windows cluster goes down when you either lose connection to your secondary site or your entire secondary site is down. If your secondary site is down, it should not affect your primary site. But hey, you have one Windows cluster across the two sites. So anybody going down impacts the overall votes. So what Windows cluster provides now with a hotfix is the ability to turn off votes on some nodes. By default, everybody has one. And you can say that my first priority is as long as I have enough number of nodes available on my primary data center, I should be up and running. I would ignore, for the benefit of health of my primary site, I would ignore if anything is happening on the secondary site. And if you want to do that, you can turn off votes on your secondary nodes. That means if you lose connectivity to your secondary site, if you lose your entire secondary site, there is absolutely no loss of votes to the Windows cluster. There is no loss of quorum to the Windows cluster, thereby eliminating any such bad things happening. So what we recommend you do is that you think about your design pattern that you want to use, and then think about how many nodes you have on each side. Then you decide that, okay, which nodes will have votes, which nodes will not have votes. In Books Online, we have articulated some general guidelines. Those are not hard and fast rules, but those are general guidelines that you should follow those guidelines to set votes. And one of those guidelines is that on your secondary side, the nodes, you give them zero votes. If you do that, that way you will prevent quorum going down for loss of secondary sites. You first decide on the votes, and then you pick your appropriate quorum model, the one to use. So for example, if you remember the availability group solution, we had two nodes on the primary side and one node on the DR side to ensure that we, by default, all three nodes will have a vote. And to ensure that there is no loss of quorum or no loss of, no impact of secondary side going down, in this picture we are showing giving zero votes to your secondary node. Then you have two nodes left. And odd number of votes is not good, because half is half, is one. Half of two is one. You will still be up and you won't still be up and running when one server or one node is available. So here in this example we add a file share, and the file share witness we use a node plus file share quorum model. And a file share always have a vote. If you have a file share in your quorum model, always have a vote. You cannot turn off vote on your file share. If you want to get rid of the file share, you want to change it, you can go back to node majority. That means file share is not part of your quorum anymore. Does it make sense? Now we have three votes in this Windows cluster. All the votes are in the primary site. Anything happens to your secondary site, no loss of Windows cluster quorum. Any node going down in the primary site, you still have other node working fine, because two out of three available, you have file share in the node. File share going down doesn't matter, because you still have two nodes up and running. Any two should be up and running and you are good. Make sense? How about if you use the failover cluster instance? Okay, you have a question. Yes. Yeah.
What happens if the primary site loses network connectivity?
From?
The whole site.
Connectivity from outside or within the site?
Center, if it loses
connectivity. Okay, so the question is, what if the primary site loses connectivity?
It will still think that it's up and running.
It will still, yes, it will still think it is up and running, but it is not available to the outside world.
No.
So what you need to do now is that you have a disaster, basically. You have site up and running, but not available to anybody, so your site is up, but useless. So you can call this as a disaster, because now your service is not available. Now you can come to your DR site, and you can do force quorum on your DR site. And once you force quorum on your DR site, then Windows cluster now will be running on that one node, and then you can force service on the availability groups. Now your availability groups will be serving from your DR site. And now you need to reconcile when your primary site comes back, how you want to restore service back to your primary site. So primary site either losing the whole site or losing connectivity is a DR situation. Make sense? And that's why you have another copy in another data center. So that's it's an insurance that paid back when your primary site lost connectivity. Okay. If you have this model where you have FCI at each site and then you have availability group between them, you see there to start with we had four nodes, and we are recommending that you turn off votes on your secondary site. That means if the secondary site goes down or the secondary site is disconnected, they will not impact the quorum. But you are left with two nodes, and you can add a file share. So you basically have a three-vote cluster. You have a four-node cluster, but three-vote cluster. File share is the one which is adding the odd number of votes to making it odd number. Any node going down on the primary site, you are fine. The file share going down on the primary side, you are fine. You still have automatic failover of the FCI. If the entire FCI on the primary side goes down, or the entire primary side goes down like in your previous case of disconnect, then you have a DR, you have a disaster situation. You can force quorum on one of the nodes on the secondary, and you will have Windows cluster running back again, and then you can restart or your SQL Server instance on those nodes, you'll be working. If you have to work for longer than you anticipated on your secondary site, we recommend that you go and change the votes again, because now your secondary site quorum must be available till you fix your primary site. So you can go back and change the votes. So changing the votes is easy. It's a Windows cluster command. It's a PowerShell or cluster.exe command. You can change the votes. Changing votes back and forth does not impact the cluster, does not impact your loose service if you do it proper way. At any given point in time, you should not have zero votes for all of them. That means you have no votes, and it will prevent you from doing that. So if you do it in a proper way, you can have you can do that at the Windows cluster level. You have a question? Okay. How do I view or change quorum model and the votes? There are multiple tools available to you to view your quorum model or change your quorum model in the in your HADR solution. As you can see, we have SQL Server tools like Always On Dashboard or DMVs to view the quorum model as well as view the node votes. However, because the votes is a Windows Server property, SQL Server tools cannot change that those votes. You have to use Windows Server tools like PowerShell and cluster.exe to be able to change the node votes. To view the quorum models, you can use the Failover Cluster Manager GUI. In a little bit, Mikkel will show you the dashboard how you can see the quorum models, node votes from the SQL Server tools. And if you're using any disk as a quorum resource, especially if you're using an asymmetric disk as your quorum resource, the only option you have to change quorum is cluster.exe. Okay, so with this, any questions before I hand over to Mikkel for a demo of all these quorum things, Always On Dashboard, monitoring? Yes, sir. Sorry? Okay, the question is, what about fail back for scenario 2 and 3? If you, when you fail over, so scenario 2 and 3 both use availability group for your DR. That means for your failover to DR, you had used a force quorum and you had used a force service for your availability group. When the primary site comes back, you should ensure how the nodes on the primary site join the Windows cluster and then rethink about your new quorum voting. Now you have to redecide who should have vote, who should not have vote. And if you want to fail back, your primary, old primary will join the availability group, but it will be in a suspended state. And you can resume from the suspended state and then use a availability group failover, a manual failover to fail them back. But you use that at your planned way, not in a way to lose service during your production hours. Does it make sense? Okay. Availability group solution is fantastic. HADR, as you saw, a lot of things goes behind the scenes to be able to, and tools are available for you to monitor. So I hand over to Mikkel to show you how you monitor HADR solution using various SQL Server tools.
Okay. In order to engage to see what I need to demo, I'm quite flexible. Who of you have actually worked yourself through an always-on deployment through the UI? There's only a few, actually. So what I will do is I will give you a feeling of what it is to deploy always-on, and I will give you some ideas how to customize the environment so you can actually apply your own monitoring rules. So that's going to be the extent of the demo. I don't have that much time. Normally I take an hour or an hour and a half to go through everything. So over here, let me switch first before I say over here. All right. What you see over here is SSMS, which is the management tool for SQL Server. We've updated it for SQL Server 2012 to have a new node over here, which is called Always On High Availability. And let's assume that you, on this server, this is going to be your primary server, you have a couple of databases that you'd like to make highly available. So, by the way, before I really start, there's a little caveat for the demo. So this is the caveat, I just want to warn you. It's 7,848 kilometers to my office where my demo server is sitting. So so far things have been going really well, but connectivity has been spotty from time to time. So I might have to switch to a PowerPoint slide deck that is exactly do what I will walk through you right now. So this is actually a live demo right now. What you will see is starts with an availability group wizard. What we our design intention was to make it give you a really high confidence in let's say making databases highly available. If you go through this wizard, there's a pretty high guarantee that everything is going to be fine. So give this availability group a random name, tag it Amsterdam, and the database needs to be selected. In this particular case, there's two databases, a CRM database and an inventory database. This is the big difference with mirroring. Mirroring could only do one database. In Orbison, you can actually, according to the books, up to 10, but really you can go well beyond that if your system requirements are well calculated. So what you typically do is you put the same databases that are within the same SLA in that group. That's a fairly decent practice that people follow. Let's move on. Let's specify my topology for this. So I'm going to select two other servers that I have connected them, so it can collect some data about it.
Is it visible to everybody?
I can actually.
Yeah. Let's check from the back. Is it visible? Okay. All the clicks everywhere.
Yeah. If it's not visible, actually, I can zoom. Try to use my zoom tool. Actually, and it seems to be failing on me again. So let me change my zoom tool.
Let's go with the default without zoom.
All right.
Okay.
In this case, we'll select two servers to be automatic failover, and we'll add another replica in a moment. But let's make this a two-node failover situation. You can specify whether those servers are readable in secondary mode. So the primary is, of course, always readable, but once a primary becomes a secondary in case of failover, you need to specify where it will become readable then. Go next from here. Specify a location for your data, initial data synchronization. And it can be the case, by the way, that you ship your disk by FedEx or whatever courier you have and put it in the server where you want it to have. And then you specify another option. If you already have a database available in recovery mode on your target site, you can also do that. That's probably more suitable for very large databases. So what will happen right now is it went through the validation. It told me that I'm not having a listener configured, which I will skip this time. I will go to listeners in a moment. Gives me overview over here. We'll finish this wizard. We'll give you a bit of detail. And I will show you the detail, in fact. Right now what's happening is Orbison uses mirroring endpoints to communicate. It starts configuring these endpoints. It needs to have the right security. It is also doing some checking on the credentials and so forth. Then it starts always on health X-Event sessions. X-Event is something fairly new. And what we've created for Orbison is a health session that only captures the critical health events that are correlated to the availability groups. So that means that if you see an issue occurring, you can actually drill down in this health in this health log, and let's say much quicker find a root causes of your issue. So it will have actually created an availability group, but now it did some backups and restores. And now we should be able to see this availability group sitting over here. Now, let's assume this is your high HA environment. You have two servers, which is fine. For quorum, you will need to provide another quorum vote. You would have probably a file share or a very reliable server added for quorum purposes. In this particular case, let's assume that you want to add another server for reporting purposes. And we can easily do that. So we'll add a replica over here, which it takes a little time to start. Like I told you, from time to time it's a little bit slow. All right. And this is this replica over here. And the purpose of this readable replica is to offload your primary servers. And let's say if your reads are not time sensitive, then you could even configure it to be asynchronous commit, which is okay for a lot of scenarios. What it also does, imagine that this server is off-site somewhere. You configure this server at another data center that you have at an arbitrary location, you could argue. It could be anywhere in the world, because since it's async. This could be a DR site for you, a fairly low-cost DR site, if you wish. The only thing that you would have to make sure of, that it could eventually catch up with its transactions. You don't want the transaction queue on the primary, let's say, to be too long, because it has to wait for the secondaries to catch up at some point, right? So now let's make this readable. There's a read intent flag as well. It means it will only accept connections that are indicated to be read intent. I will talk about that in a moment. So on time, I'm doing quite well, I think. So let's continue. Go through the same motions over here. And while it's actually continuing here, what you see over here, all of the UI, all of the wizards, and there's tons of other UI over here. We have a full PowerShell solution for the end-to-end scenario available as well. So whatever you can do over here, you can do through PowerShell. So let's finish it. And while we are finishing it, let me show you the dashboard, which will give you the dashboard's purpose is that you at any given time give you an idea about the health state of the entire system. So the health state meaning, if it's green, mean everything is fine. You can fail over any time. There's no risk right now of the environment to be compromised. Right now you see right now a warning, and the warning is because the secondary didn't exactly come online, because it's currently being provisioned in the background. But once that's actually finished, it will turn to green as well. Now what we can do, in fact, let's click on that warning and it will see what it says. And let's zoom over here for a moment. Over here it says that it's an unhealthy synchronization state, and that's probably correct, because it hasn't been synchronizing yet, since it's just in the process of being set up. So, and while we were talking about this, the wizard finished, and all lights are green. Now this dashboard is also fully available in PowerShell. If you want to, if you like to integrate, let's say, health state into your own environment, you have BeamC, Tivoli, system centers, or what have you, and you'd like to integrate it into your own solution, then you can use the test dash SQL commandlets to test health in a very simple way. Full parity, but all the details, including those pop-ups that you just see, all of that data is retrievable through PowerShell without any reservation, 100% parity. So from that perspective, we have actually reused those PowerShell commandlets to add system center capability for always-on monitoring. So if you are using System Center, you can just download a management pack, and always-on availability group will be managed in the same fashion as you see on the dashboard over here, including the same level of detail. So now you have an availability group. Now I created one earlier that has a listener. I had some issues with the listener, so I'm not going to try to create a new one. This one is working right now. And what I'd like to show you is this one is right now. I connected the listener to this query editor to this listener, and it shows you this server, which is currently the primary. Now let's fail over this availability group, and let's see what happens when I do that. So I'm going to fail over here. And one of the key scenarios that we wanted to enable was to give you 100% confidence when you fail over. Fail over is typically a stressful situation for system managers, DBAs, and IT pro. And we made it really easy to give you insight how failover is going to affect your data, where you're going to have data loss. If there's a critical decision, it will tell you on the dashboard here that you will have to make a critical decision, right, to lose data. So right now, actually, everything is fine. You see that all lines are green. I could, for some reason, I actually have two synchronous commits. I thought I had an asynchronous commit version created, as was this. But in any case, we just skip that for a moment. We'll go to the secondary. It says no data loss. It's ready to fail over without data loss. If you were to have an asynchronous secondary, it will warn you, and in fact, you will have to select another checkbox that states that, yes, I am aware that I might lose data. So if you want to know how much data you're losing, in fact, there's, remember Sanjay talking about RPO and RTO? There's extra columns you can add over here that gives you the information about the estimated recovery time. And oops.
This is a very useful feature to have on the as when Mikhail is right clicking, you see a lots of columns. All those columns are from DMVs that monitor the health continuous basis. You can add them to your dashboard, and the key attributes that you want to monitor, for example, data loss or data latency, or when was the last commit time happening, what was the last LSN that was committed on each of the secondary, you can see all of them on your dashboard. So that gives you one picture of everything that is happening. But there are a lot of columns then you can accommodate on the real estate on the dashboard, so we give you the flexibility.
So these columns, which we haven't added by default, by the way, which we're going to do. Yeah. Because this is an asynchronous secondary, and we cannot guarantee that all transactions have been committed. Actually, there is a way to tell, and in fact, this is this is not the RTM version of the dashboard, by the way. There is a way to tell, so which I can look up later and get to you.
So if you right-click on the columns, there will be a column called last hardened LSN or last commit time. That will tell you when was it last committed on each of these replicas, which will tell you that, okay, it was 3 seconds behind or 5 seconds behind, and etc. But that gives you a kind of a more informed decision that these many minutes of seconds of data you might lose.
But yeah, this field right now will continue to say synchronizing, because we let's say from the dashboard's perspective, we cannot give you 100% full guarantee. So the dashboard has been designed as our design mantra was, and I don't know how many times I've said it while we were developing this decision-making tool, a decision-making tool, nothing else. It's not a monitoring tool, by the way, from that perspective. Yes.
By then, you make sure that when you do a plain failover,
yes,
you just finish the transaction at the other side before you switch over.
The question is, when we do a fail plan over, why don't we finish the transactions? The transactions are actually finished when you do a fail plan over if you're on a synchronous replica.
Yeah, but you could also do that in an asynchronous.
So what you can do is that you can convert the asynchronous replica to a synchronous replica.
That's correct. So the best practice here is to temporarily convert to a synchronous replica, wait until it caught up, which you can find in the dashboard.
That's what we'll say,
and then switch over and then bring it back to async. Now, there was an excellent point you bring. We actually had it on our design list. We decided not to go do that because of the lacked time. But in the wizard, we actually wanted to auto-convert to, let's say, a synchronous replica. However, we do not know all the customer scenarios and how much, let's say, making something from async to sync is quite a dramatic operation. You might actually delay your primary suddenly because the secondary might be very slow. So we decided, because we didn't have all the data yet, also time-wise, to not go do that. But the best practice is to convert. If you're confident about
it. Since it's a planned failover, it's a controlled failover, you can control when you want to convert it to synchronous and failover and then back. So we give you the power through the wizard, as well as through T-SQL command.
So let me finish that wizard. There's a management pack available today. And it uses, like I said earlier, it uses the exact same infrastructure underlying the dashboard. So now, the nice thing of that is that the dashboard is, how many of you know PBM, policy-based management? All right, it's using PBM under the cover. You could add your own policies to this dashboard. In fact, let me go show you something interesting. I think you will like that.
Only 2 minutes left.
I got 2 minutes left.
A total 2 minutes left. You're out of time. So if you can 1 minute back so that I can finish.
I'll give you 1 minute back.
Yeah.
Let's do the failover. This is actually the interesting part of the talk, of my part of the talk. Sanjay's part is, of course, monumentally more interesting. And actually it just failed over. And I've actually connected to the listener port. And what will happen is it will fail. Let me just not go do this, by the way. I'm looking at the wrong dashboard. So over here you will find that this is now secondary. So the secondary dashboard actually has less data on it. I'll take a couple of few seconds. Okay, so this is a secondary perspective. The only thing I want to show you, get you away with it, there's a warning here. And this warning is actually, I just injected a PBM policy that indicates, well, my primary failed over, but it's to another server. But that server is not my primary preferred server for being the primary. The primary could be close to you for operations or what have you, or it's a better server. You can create any policy and any amount of policies you want and add it to the dashboard. The nice thing is, once you add it to this environment, System Center will also receive those policies automatically, so you can extend System Center through SQL Server policies, which is a real cool feature. So with that, I'll leave to Sanjay.
Okay, last final 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
So how do we switch?
Yeah, switch.
Okay. Thanks, Mikkel, for the wonderful demo. So one quick thing I wanted to touch base is how do we migrate from older solutions? There are some key considerations that you should keep in mind. Are you using the existing hardware or you're buying new hardware? That makes a decision point on your migration plan. Are you migrating the operating system as well? Right now, all the solutions is available in Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008 R2. Few months down the line, Windows Server 2012 will also come. You can now migrate to Windows Server 2000, now upgrade to SQL Server 2012 and availability groups and all the solutions, and few months down the line you can upgrade the Windows Server, or when Windows Server is available you can have all things upgrade together. So all these migrations, these are key considerations that you need to have when you are actually migrating from an older solution to a newer solutions. One key thing is that because always on requires Windows clustering no matter which design pattern you choose. So if your previous solution did not involve any Windows clustering, or if it involved Windows clustering only at local site but not across sites, means involve your Windows clustering team. Not just DBAs cannot work in isolations anymore. You work together to decide how the networking, how the Quora model will work across the sites. Application connection string change, of course, because we have introduced new capabilities in the connection string. For example, to access the read-only secondaries, we have a read intent, application intent equal to read-only in the connection string. We have for multi-subnet failover, we have multi-subnet failover in the connection string. You could migrate all your HA and DR together, or you could migrate only the HA and migrate the DR later on to the new solution. And the one interesting thing is your secondary was a failover cluster instance and you used mirroring between them. Now if you want to have availability groups instead of mirroring, you need to reseed the secondary because that was a separate Windows cluster. Now you have to undo the Windows cluster there, or basically delete the Windows cluster on your secondary site, join the nodes to the Windows cluster which covers the primary site as well, and now you recreate your secondary instance. With that, we talked, this is just a brief summary of all the three design patterns we talked about. I welcome everybody to tomorrow's session where you will see these design patterns being practical in production used by real customer. I'll give you 5 customer examples how and who is using what at D204, 10:15 a.m. That's mostly it about. Thanks for being with us. I'll be happy to take any questions. We'll stay here for a few minutes before the next speaker comes, or you can find us in the booth for further discussions. And thanks a lot. Make sure you put your earbuds.